when everybody is looking for the sacrificial ring that has ended up on Ringo's finger, and somebody comes up with the question, has no one looked in the wash basin?
Justin Souther, you're Ken Henke, and
yes,
we're both
elitist bastards.
Yes, and we're also Mountain Express film critics.
This is true too.
They're one and the same, I guess.
In this case, yes, that is true. Yes, so it's interchangeable, in fact. Mm-hmm. And here we are at
the Carolina Asheville and the Cinema Lounge upstairs.
That's right. And we've been to the movies and are planning on going to more movies, and I guess we're going to talk about that.
Yes.
And not necessarily in that order.
Hopefully you'll listen.
Yes.
Hopefully. So well, you...
Yes?
Well, there's a new Joan Rivers documentary this week.
Well, you make it sound like there's been like a plethora of Joan Rivers documentaries, and
Well, there could be. Nobody watches documentaries.
That could well be.
A whole subgenre.
The sad thing about this is this Joan Rivers, a piece of work documentary, which opens on Friday, has more solid laughs in it than most of the comedies I've seen this summer, which I'm not sure if that's a reflection on Joan Rivers or on how bad the comedies I've seen this summer are. But it's... I didn't really want to watch it because I'd forgotten that Joan Rivers is actually funny.
Because most people...
Well, yeah, but because all you think of is all the tabloid crap. You think of Joan Rivers' facelifts, Joan Rivers' public fights, you know, all the rest of this stuff. But she's actually extremely funny. And if you were around in the 60s when she first appeared on Johnny Carson, she was like nothing you had ever seen before. I mean, we're talking about someone that they, you know, had to bleep constantly and were perfectly cool with that because it was obvious what she was saying.
Right.
So she was still funny. You know, this is the woman at 74. She turned 75 during the course of the film. It starts off with her without makeup, and boy, that's not pretty. And she kind of assembles the face that looks like what we think of as Joan Rivers. And then she goes to play at a crummy dive, which has maybe 70 people in it. And she's, you know, nobody will touch her with a stick. And it kind of charts during the year that this takes some highs and some lows. And it ends with her becoming really bankable again, which is, the whole thing is, you know, the whole industry is cyclical. All the entertainment industry, it works in cycles. And she's back on top at the end of the film, which is gives it a nice feel to it. She's unapologetic. She is outspoken. She obviously has no intention of toning it down. And except for the fact that people do kind of provide an arm for her to lean on when she walks, she's just as mouthy as she was when she was in her 30s. So it's definitely worth seeing.
Okay.
Except that people don't go see documentaries.
Right.
Yeah, so.
And also... Opening last week. The big animated picture.
The big animated picture, which did much better than anybody ever anticipated it doing, especially since it has a fairly low quotient of 3D screens.
Right.
Thanks to The Last Airbender and Toy Story 3 still being out.
I think it feels like a lot of it has to do with, for whatever reason, the voice talent. I noticed a lot of, not so much an older crowd, but like a early 20s, that,
well, I mean, Steve Carell has a draw, there's no question. And he's good. The voice talent is all good. It's all solid. My biggest complaint is that they've got Julie Andrews in there. They don't give her a whole lot to do, but she seems to enjoy what she's doing, which is a completely unsympathetic role.
Okay.
But it's not a great picture. It's an okay picture. I didn't mind that I sat through it. I minded that I sat through the first 3 minutes or so, because the first 3 minutes or so are nothing but that damn trailer. That okay. first one with the obnoxious American tourist going to the pyramid that turns out to be an inflated replica. It is exactly that. It is not like an expanded version of that. It's that. And then there's about 10 minutes of not very good, and then it becomes okay. And occasionally it becomes a little bit more than okay. But it's not a great picture. I mean, it's not something I think I would ever see again. And let's see, I saw it last Friday. This is Tuesday. I've probably forgotten most of it.
Okay. That could just be old age.
That could be old age. But in this case, I think it has to do with it's not memorable.
Okay. Likely story.
Likely, yes. One day they'll be saying this about you.
That's fine.
They probably say it about you now. Yeah.
Well, that's true.
Come on, I dare you. Ask me about Winter's Bone.
No, I don't want to talk about it.
We don't have a choice.
So. Well, then we'll tell me about
Winter's
Bone.
Oh, okay. I will, since you asked.
The big indie release.
The big indie release.
The year so far, right?
Yes. And unlike the last big indie release of the year so far, which was Exit Through the Gift Shop, this one is actually done extremely well. In fact, I'm happy to say this speaks well of you, Asheville, that both Winter's Bone and Micmacs performed far above the national average last week. So pat yourselves on the back for recognizing quality work. And I am...
And you, this is a movie you didn't think was going to...
Oh, no, this was a movie that I really thought I was going to hate. I thought this was going to be 5 reels of hard luck with people that I would walk across the street to avoid. It had all the earmarks of a type of indie film that I don't like. And I was amazed. It's pretty much everything they say it is. The story is compelling, the characters are strong, and it's not ultimately downbeat, which is very hard to explain, and I don't want to give away the way it ends, because, I mean, some of the stuff is really, really strong. I mean, the whole thing about this girl finding her father, or just as well as finding her father, his corpse, so that she can prove that he's dead, since he's jumped bail, and... they're going to lose the house, which, I mean, how old-fashioned is that? That's right. You know, that's barnstorming, pay-the-rent melodrama. And but it really, it works. All of it works. And the girl who plays the main character, her name is Jennifer Lawrence, is truly remarkable. So, all in all, the film is remarkable. And... I still think Micmacs is the best film this year so far, or the best film this summer so far, but this is coming in pretty close. Mr. Souther, I understand that you sat through Predators.
I did.
Did you?
I did.
And what do you have to tell us about this?
I think how much, to a certain extent, this is not across the board, but I think a lot of how much you enjoy this movie is going to depend on how much you like the original Predator and how much you're into those films. It's easily better than those corny Alien versus Predator things, which were just dull.
That doesn't really take a lot.
And so. It's much better than the idea that Danny Glover's fighting space aliens and L.A. and Predator 2. But this one is very much, it's almost like, I want to say exactly like, it's very much in the same vein as the original. It's very,
so
it's
you're
obvious that they
you're presupposing that I remember the original that
no,
well.
Not.
So, you know.
Did I ever say Ken Hinckley?
No, but it would appear that you're, you know, comparing it to the original. And
I am comparing it to it. Well, I mean, it's they're both take place in the jungle, except in this case, it's on a alien planet that's been turned into a game reserve for these giant dreadlocked aliens to go hunt down.
This raises the question, how hard can it be to hunt down Topher Grace?
Well, when he's got a bunch of other people with guns with him, it becomes a bit more difficult. So, but it's for the kind of big, dumb summer action movie that it is, it's good.
And most of the big, dumb action summer movies that we've had have been, well, not so good.
Right. It's I don't want to say it's quite, I guess the only comparable one is probably Iron Man 2, but I don't know if it's quite as good, but it's sort of different. It's not as fun, but it never tries. It's a much gorier movie.
Well, of course, they went for the full R on this, you know. Iron Man is a franchise, and it's not going to go for anything past PG-13.
But the same thing as Iron Man, it's got a very good cast. Adrian Brody is probably miscast, but he does well enough. He's got better range than this role allows him. And so this is more a... Christian Bale's boring enough to be in this role. He would have done very well.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah, but the movie would have been much worse. Okay. But... It's fun enough.
Okay.
It's one of those things, if it was on TV one night and I had nothing better to do, I'd probably sit and watch it and not regret it.
But you're not saying that I should, like, beat a path
to
the theater.
No, but I mean, but if you're a Predator fan or you just want to watch a big, dumb action movie, then
this is your movie. Big, dumb action movie to watch.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this, we have yet another Thursday Horror Picture Show.
At 8 o'clock in the Cinema Lounge, which is where we are now.
It's very meta of us.
Yes. Well, they can't see where we are. We could be lying about this. But we aren't. We're really here. Even though Mr. Souther and our illuminated producer both tried to convince me earlier they were figments of my imagination, I didn't buy it because they seem to still be interacting with me.
You're just very stubborn.
Yeah. Well, that may be. In any case... we are here, and this Thursday we will be here showing Peter Jackson's aptly named Bad Taste.
And if your only interaction with Peter Jackson has been Lord of the Rings or King Kong...
Or that butt-numbing Lovely Bones.
Right. The Lovely Butt-Numbing?
Yes, the Lovely Butt-Numbing. This will come as a shock. This is splattery fun at its splattery best. It's made over a period of 4 years on weekends with a 16mm camera. Because of the New Zealand gun laws, all of the guns in the film are homemade. They look pretty good, but their blasts are kind of on the... you can tell that they're kind of like put in by an effect. There's fire coming out of the end of these machine guns that obviously isn't there, but it adds to the cheesy charm of the whole thing. And there's a good deal of style to the film. I mean, you know, for something that somebody made pretty much on their own. I mean, this is backyard filmmaking taken to an extreme. It's got a good deal of style. It's intentionally gross, it's intentionally gory, it's intentionally funny. There may be a couple of occasions where it's unintentionally funny, but you can't tell the difference. And it's just, generally speaking, it's a nice, cheeky, juicy, splattery movie. And you know, as I said in the review, we are bringing this one out by popular demand, which means somebody requested it.
Yes.
Yes, so...
Now, is this, and I guess it's unfair to compare somebody's work when they were, how old was Peter Jackson when this was made?
He was young.
Yes, to what he's doing now, but is this, do you miss this Peter Jackson? Would it be nice to see him come back?
Yes, it would. I mean, for me, Peter Jackson peaked with Heavenly Creatures in 1994. And good as the Lord of the Ring films are, I'm over them.
Right.
I don't want to see them again, except maybe the first one. I liked the first one much better than the other two. Lovely Bones, no, I definitely don't want to see that again. Right. King Kong, I'll take the original. So, you know.
What else is in there? The Frighteners?
Yeah, The Frighteners, which most people have blocked from their minds. I don't remember it as being particularly bad, although I remember the ending as being incredibly cheesy. But, no, I'd like to see him, not maybe back to this level, but maybe back to the level of Dead Alive.
Definitely.
You know, that's, you
just
know,
one more time.
That's a little slicker than this, with its 5,000 gallons of fake blood, or whatever the outrageous claim is, which actually the film kind of bears out that it probably is something in that range, because it's pretty much a nonstop bloodbath with other unpleasant fluids mixed in occasionally. But, you know,
bore on that at some point, I'm sure.
Come out, you know, have a good time with this. Remember, they serve food here, so, you know, it probably would go really well with, would this be a case for the pulled pork nachos?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
Certainly. And this coming Tuesday, we have another Asheville Film Society free screening, and this one is
Richard Lester's Help.
Yeah, so anybody that
with the Beatles
was turned off by Blue Velvet
should come back and see Help.
Yes.
And you can be turned off for a whole different set of reasons, possibly. Or not, as the case may be.
And I'm people that just think of this as a Beatles movie should really see it.
Yeah, you should, because it's more than a Beatles movie, although it is very much a Beatles movie. I mean, there's no question of that. But it's, you know, this film has now been seriously legitimized because the most recent DVD incarnation of it has a several-page essay appreciation in it by Martin Scorsese, who likens Dick Lester to Antonioni and Godard and Truffaut, and says that these films are just as important and in many ways just as creative. They're just working in a somewhat different key. And I've been saying this for over 20 years. So, you know, now that Martin Scorsese has caught up with me, we're ready to unveil Help on the world again. And I mean, it's a lovely, I mean, it's the whole thing is it's a film that's a joke, that knows it's a joke, and works on the assumption that the audience is in on this joke. We don't really believe that anybody believes that the Beatles actually live in the same house, that John has a little pit in the floor that has his bed in it, which appears to contain nothing but copies of his book, A Spaniard in the Works. We don't really believe that they live in a situation where Paul has an organ that rises up out of the floor when you play it, or that George grows grass of the lawn variety on the floor of the apartment, or that Ringo has a variety of vending machines. I mean, none of this stuff is even remotely approached as being realistic.
Right.
And so neither is this plot about some Indian death cult run by two very non-Indian actors, Leo McKern as Klang and Eleanor Braun as Ami, who perpetually wanders through the film, assuring Paul and occasionally turning to the camera and assuring the viewer that she is not what she seems. So, I mean, the whole thing is played out for this one tremendous joke that a girl, who actually is the next sacrificial victim for this goddess Kali, that it has sent Ringo the ring that you have to be wearing in order to be sacrificed, and everything is an attempt to get this ring, either off Ringo's hand or after it's no longer her turn to sacrifice Ringo. In addition to which, you have a mad scientist named Foot, played by Victor Spinetti, and his assistant Algernon, played by Roy Kinnear, who are out to get the ring because Spinetti believes that with a ring like that he could, dare I say it, rule the world. So, I mean, the whole thing is just one long thing of... The point of the whole thing is to have fun. And that's what it does. But it also has fun on a very cinematic level, too.
Well, it's also one of these movies where they're genuinely having fun. It's not like...
Yes, I mean, and they...
It's like,
they,
no, you're going to have fun because we're dancing.
No, it's more like we're having fun. Come along and have fun with us. It doesn't feel like it's smacking you in the face. Enjoy this, damn it.
It's not Mamma Mia. That's, I think, what we're saying.
Yeah, well, that's it. Few things, fortunately, are Mamma Mia, so there's, you know. And this most definitely is Mamma
Mia. I think what's interesting to me is that you aren't... Nobody's going to make a movie like this.
No.
Like, you've had a Hannah Montana movie.
And it's nothing like
no,
this.
No. It's
bad.
Yeah. And so that's what's... And most astonishing about it.
I know. I mean, it is amazing that anyone would take pop culture icons and actually make not one, but have made two brilliant movies out of documenting them in the most unrealistic manner possible. So, you know, I mean, it's a pure fun experience all the way around. Although that time that it was suggested that when we were stuck at the theater and on New Year's Eve, and it was suggested that we shouldn't run the hours because it would be too depressing, and we ran this, and it depressed the hell out of me because they were so young. It just made me feel even older than they are, and yet I know I'm not. And I have a great advantage over two of them at this point, since I'm still breathing and they aren't. So
the other two are... Well, at least Paul's... a billionaire now?
At the very least, yes.
Okay. I don't know about Ringo.
Ringo is just inextricably Ringo and always will be.
Right.
So.
And also, speaking of Asheville Film Society.
Right.
This coming next Wednesday.
This coming Wednesday.
The 21st.
The 21st.
We'll be having a special...
A members only special screening of the new Tilda Swinton picture, I Am Love, which I have seen, which is a remarkable film with an even more remarkable soundtrack on it, which I need to find out more about how this soundtrack was accomplished, but it is one of the few soundtracks I have heard recently where I was really just blown away by the use of the music in the film. And but the deal is you actually have to be an AFS member. Now...
But you get in for free...
You get in for free if you are an AFS member. Now, I'll say you were going to come see this on Friday, which is when it actually opens to the public. If you go to see it on Friday, an adult ticket is $9.75. If you buy an AFS membership, you've spent $10. So for a quarter more, you get into this for free. You'll also get into the next
screening
like this, which is Neil Jordan's Ondine in a couple weeks. For free, on the same $10 now.
And we'll probably have more. We're
going to try and keep this going. And the next time you come to a movie at the Carolina, if you've got your AFS card with you, you get $1 off it. So really, the next time you go to the movies, you've made a 75-cent profit on this. So think of it that way. And
yes.
Take the plunge, yes.
It's like a big happy family.
Yes, and actually it is. We are pretty much a friendly group.
Pretty much. Ken can get grumpy sometimes. Don't get too close to his face.
I get cranky.
Yes, I know it rhymes.
Yes, cranky is my word. You can get grumpy.
Okay.
Somebody else can get
Salvers.
Dopey.
Yeah,
and, you know,
okay.
Dog.
I think I'm sleepy.
Happy. Sleepy. Probably, yeah, sleepy I think describes you, yeah.
So this week, the Great Big Giant release.
Well,
of the week.
Let's take the first thing opening this week first, which is
Sorcerer's. We'll get to you in suspense.
Yeah, we're going to leave
what's bigger than Nicolas Cage's hairpiece? We'll get back to that in a minute.
Yes, well,
because Nicolas Cage's hairpiece and Nicolas Cage.
Nicolas Cage and Nicolas Cage's hairpiece, and it's a different hairpiece, are in this new Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Hairpieces,
I know, which is wonderful. Now, I believe that if anyone would like to let us know what their favorite Nicolas Cage hairpiece is, we would be glad to convey this and possibly even run an informal poll as to your favorite Nicolas Cage wig. And this one...
Well, I haven't got a good look at it. He has the hat on.
Yeah, but this one looks like it's in the running, but it's not as greasy as that one from Bangkok Dangerous.
Well, so few people have seen Bangkok Dangerous.
That's true, but that's a hard wig to beat. For sheer... What was he thinking?
Which I think my favorite part of your Bangkok Dangerous review was that you got Nicolas Cage and Nicolas Cage's hairpiece in the
cast list. Yes, that's true. I thought that was.
It's Sorcerer's Apprentice is, well, it's a Disney film,
and they're trying to milk the connection to the Fantasia thing, which in which case that means that,
and also that it's the director of National Treasure, which people like.
Right, here's the idea. I'm sure you're going to see words like Disney, Jerry Bruckheimer, John Turteltaub, Nicolas Cage, and you're going to go, oh, like the National Treasure movies.
I think they're also trying to bank a little on Harry Potter, though they're not going to say Harry Potter, but obviously there's...
But the whole thing is that it doesn't look like it's anything like the National Treasure movies, which were not great movies, but, I mean, they were fine, disposable family... Fair, overproduced, overbudgeted.
You know. Alfred Molina looks.
But this does have Alfred Molina in it, and that is usually a plus in anything.
Right. Big fur-colored coat.
Yeah, so it's got that going for it. It just doesn't. Well,
the Nicolas Cage and mainstream stuff
usually is not a good combination. No. But I will say that the trailer looked magnificently okay to me. But I'm guessing they don't expect it to do a whole lot simply by virtue of the fact that this is a special movie because it's opening on Wednesday, which that has lost its luster, I think, entirely because too many things open on Wednesday and they just confuse moviegoers.
I didn't know it was opening Wednesday till Sunday, maybe? Saturday?
Well, now you
know.
Yes,
yes.
And the thing is, I don't know of a single theater that is putting it on more than one screen. However, I know theaters that are putting the really big opener this week on two screens and even three screens. So the Thunder this week is not expected to go to Sorcerer's Apprentice. It is instead expected to go to...
Christopher Nolan's Inception?
Yes.
Which... I've yet to read any reviews. I still, from the trailers, have no idea what this movie's about.
I have a vague idea what
it's
about.
And I kind of, at this point, I want to keep it that way. Because there's so few times that I have no idea what something's about.
Well...
I doubt I'll make it...
You probably will pick up pieces before you actually,
no, of course,
but
by the time I get around to watching it.
My big thing is I like Christopher Nolan. I think he's an interesting filmmaker. I still have never decided whether Memento is actually good or just really, really clever. Insomnia I thought was surprisingly good, but I've only seen it one time. The Prestige is a film that I've seen several times, and to me it just keeps getting better every time I see it. Mm-hmm. I'm not that wild about his Batman movies. I think they take themselves way too seriously, and they suffer from Christian Bale's Batman. And Christian Bale's Batman takes an already not exactly life of the party character and milks what life of the party there is out of it. So, I know everybody thinks they're wonderful and all this, but I'm just not that sold on them. But I'm hoping that this is going to be significantly different. The cast, for me, is better. It doesn't have Christian Bale to start with.
Right. And it's also, I'm really hoping this is like one of those times where a filmmaker has been given the keys. He's doing whatever he wants at this point.
Well, yeah.
Because
yeah.
if anybody can right now, it's Nolan, I would think.
Yeah, Nolan would be the
and
person
if he's anybody
who could do
who
anything
could,
he wanted to make.
Yeah, and if and he's creative enough to where he could do anything he wants to do.
You know what it, just from the look of things, what it kind of reminds me of?
What?
Mark Forster's Stay.
Okay. It keeps reminding me, and I can't, I think it's more the wardrobe, and there's nothing about, like, and maybe just the tone of the trailer, which has, the movie could be anything.
To the degree the trailer has a tone,
It reminds me of Dark City, though I doubt it's as much of a sci-fi film.
I think it's a different kind of sci-fi film than Dark City.
But it's something about that movie reminds
me of the
trailer.
But it would be interesting to me if somebody can take and make something that is even remotely like Stay and have it actually work at the box office.
Right.
I mean, I thought Stay was brilliant, but it died.
Though I'm waiting for one of these movies that just angers everybody but us.
Well, this could be it.
One.
Although right now the fanboys are out in force. So far the movie has only one bad review out of 27, last I looked, on Rotten Tomatoes. And a lot of the reviews are not from what I would call credible sources. I don't consider anybody perfectly credible, but there are people I will pay attention to, and there are people that I'm not going to pay attention to. And, you know, one of the people I will pay attention to is David Edelstein. And he's the one bad review. I fully expect this man to be lynched before the week is out. The last I knew, there were 394 comments. Now, they're not all attacking him because, of course, once these things get started, they take on a life of their own and it becomes infighting.
Right.
In between the people who don't like Nolan and between the people who don't like people criticizing anything. And then there's, you know, well, he shouldn't criticize the film based on how popular Christopher Nolan. It's like, the man does not live in a vacuum. No pop culture exists.
He'd have asthma.
That's true. No pop culture exists in a vacuum or in a cave. And it's impossible for you not to know anything about the films, the people who make them, or how they're being promoted and how they're being regarded. It'd be kind of stupid to think that you could be. They're not going to this thing blindly going, oh, I don't know who Christopher Nolan is. I don't know what this is about. Well, they may not know what it's about. But they're not going to it blindly. They're going to it predisposed to like it. So, you know, it's not like there's some sort of uneven playing field here. That you have, you know, it's an even playing field. Everybody goes in with some kind of preconception. My preconception is I'm interested and I hope that it really is everything it's supposed to be.
It'd be nice.
Would be.
And then the
yes.
One of the indie releases.
One of the indie releases. This is called Cyrus. It's gotten awfully good reviews for a movie from the Duplass brothers. The thing is that I'm looking at this, and I'm willing to be surprised. I would love to be surprised. I was surprised by Winter's Bone last week. Maybe I'll be surprised again this week. But I have disliked, and I am being really mild about it, everything that I have ever seen that the Duplass brothers had anything to do with, and the entire so-called mumblecore aesthetic of looking and listening to 20-somethings whine about their lives with a shaky handheld camera.
Which at this point, from the trailer, it looks like it's now devolved into being shot like an episode of The Office.
But that is a step up from what these films usually look like. So that, the possibility of getting something good from John C. Reilly, it has happened in the past, it could happen in the future. Catherine Keener's presence, Jonah Hill is kind of a mixed bag. But this could be the exception. And apparently, depending on who you listen to, some of the mumblecore aesthetic has been either toned down or removed in favor of a more accessible Hollywood-style movie, which in this case, a mumblecore movie makes me want to go find the biggest, dumbest, loudest, stupidest Hollywood blockbuster. I mean, we're talking, I want to go see a Michael Bay movie after I've seen a mumblecore film. It would be preferable in my mind. So this has a lot to overcome, but I'm really hoping it does. I would rather be pleasantly surprised than spend 90 to 100 minutes in mumblecore hell.
Good luck.
Thanks. I probably need it.
Enter the breach. Once again, I'm Justin Sowler.
Yes, he is. I can vouch for that.
I'm a film critic with the Mountain Express.
This is also true. And I'm Ken Hankey, who is also a film critic with the Mountain Express. And we are elitist bastards who are coming to you through the courtesy of the Mountain Express. And
through sound waves.
Sound waves and things like that.
Science.
And, yeah.
It's pretty exciting.
It is. And we have our very own producer, coherer, Mr. Steve Schanefelt.
Rambling man.
Yes.
See you next week, Ken.
You'll see me before next week, so that's sort of a moot.
Well, we'll see everybody.
We'll see the rest of you, except we really won't. We'll talk to you.
We're
talking into a microphone, not to you, but
I like to think we're talking to them.
Well, it is nice, yes. And I like to think of those people that
they're kind enough to have made it this far.
That's true, yes. Then they're definitely, I think we are talking to them, or with them almost. Yes. Especially those who...
I hope they're replying.
Especially those who have downloaded this and have taken us jogging with them. Thank you. It's the most exercise I will ever get.